Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Dad.
Hello, Grace.
So, talk to me. We are in lockdown together, sort of, half-heartedly.
Yeah.
How are you finding it?
Well, I've been 6 weeks now, because if you remember, I went to Sport Relief, and I was meant to be fighting Piers Morgan, but he didn't turn up. And I felt very uneasy the whole time I was there. So when I came back, even though the government was saying everything's fine, I thought this is
what, as in you felt you had symptoms?
No, I just thought this is going all wrong. This is going to be really bad. And as you know, I'm very friendly with other leaders in different parts of the world. And Edi Rama, in particular in Albania, he was saying to me, this is going to be really, really bad. And you need to watch out because your asthma, your depression and all that. And I'd already been moving to that. For example, Burnley were meant to play Man City. And I'd actually decided this is quite a big thing for me. I was probably not going to go.
And then didn't they cancel the
game?
Then
it was cancelled, yeah. So then I came back. And so I've actually not been out apart from here in the house and mainly up here in my office.
Going out isn't here, yeah.
Right, and then going on the heath every morning with Mum, and that's it.
That's it. Six you haven't days. Been to a shop?
Not really, because I haven't. I've been, I might have popped in to buy this and that, but very little.
And unlikely.
Pretty unlikely. And have I found it? I mean, okay, the first 3 weeks, I just actually made a list of all the different things that I've written in the 6 weeks. I mean, it's incredible. I was definitely manic in the first few weeks. I was waking at 4:30, 4 o'clock, getting out, writing loads. I finished a novel. I started another book. I've written about 50 different columns for different places. That's definitely manic. And then I had a really bad, about 4 days in, and I was a bit grouchy. And then I've been fine. I feel quite an even keel. I get very, very, very pissed off watching the government doing what they're doing, watching the media as well. Those briefings are absolutely doing my head in. But I feel I've got to watch them.
I actually don't now.
I know you don't.
Unless it's going to be something really interesting. I watched like a roundup of the whole week today in news on the BBC.
Mm.
But I'll get a notification if it's something that's seriously important. I find it so dementing watching them just skirt around answering actual questions.
You know, they've gone over 20,000 now. I was just thinking today.
But that's not including care homes.
No, exactly. 20,000 in hospitals. And I was thinking, right, yet another day tomorrow when we were due at Liverpool, Burnley were due at Liverpool, and it's off, obviously. But I was thinking today, if you took every person who died in hospital, that is now the capacity of Turf Moor Stadium. That's a lot of people.
That's a really dark thought.
I know, but, you know, I have dark thoughts, you know that.
Yeah, well, we all do.
Mm.
I've got very dark thoughts, but I've also got very happy, lovely
You've been very up most of the time.
I'm actually really fine.
Yeah, you've been quite buzzy.
Well, not fine. Like, obviously, I've experienced great loss in terms of work. I won't be able to do a gig for at least a year.
Mm.
I was halfway through my tour. I was meant to be doing lots of cool festivals this summer.
Mm.
But that's all relative compared to other people. But I'm feeling very positive about how adaptable I've been, actually. It's really reassuring to know that I can adapt and I didn't only have one thing that I can do, and I found other things to do and I found other avenues for money. And
must be nice to know the fridge is there as well.
The fridge is lovely, but actually my fridge, so I'll just explain for... Yeah. I have a fridge. I live next door to my parents because I'm tragically obsessed with them and have been basically their stalker ever since I met them, which is nearly 26 years.
But we are
one,
they should understand we're one household and that you don't actually have to go out to come in.
No, exactly. I'm not going out. So we are technically quarantining together, but I have the granny flat. It was bought for the granny. The granny didn't want it. Instead, the baby got it. Spoiled brat.
Yeah, so you're around the whole time. You're in every morning, you're in the afternoon, you're in every evening. But I've been impressed, actually. I've been impressed by all three of you. The boys as well. I think you've dealt with it really well.
So let's talk about, quickly, we'll talk about other stuff, but the impact that this period of lockdown and isolation will have on relationships and on people who are, quarantining together, because I keep doing stuff on my Instagram where I say, tell me what's happening with your love life, and so many people are saying, I want to break up with my boyfriend, I'm quarantining with my boyfriend, I want to break up with him. Mm. Like, this whole period is driving me mad. Domestic violent rates have gone up
300%.
How's it been with you and mum?
Really good, actually. We haven't had a single big row.
Not one?
Not really. I mean, we've had a few niggles, and but no, nothing. Not a big row at all.
Maybe that's because you don't have other people. Like, I sometimes think with you two, it's like other people. I think with everyone, actually, other people can trigger stressful situations that cause arguments. Mm. When it is just you two, and you have enough space to kind of not be on top of each other.
Well, occasionally we are.
Oh, for God's sake. Are you kidding?
You know, let's say you were born, Grace.
Have you been having sex? Let's not pretend that, you know. Oh, you've only had sex 3 times in your whole life. It's disgusting.
No, we've been getting on really well.
That's horrible.
Oh, she's blushing. My daughter is blushing. The other thing I've got to say, the dog is so happy.
I know. She really is.
I'm really worried about her when we get back to normal and I start going abroad and stuff. I mean, because she just loves being with us all the time.
But so many dogs are going to be really shocked. I keep thinking it's worse for people who are getting puppies now, because those puppies are going to get completely used to never being alone.
Yeah.
And then they'll be like a year old, and then suddenly people are going out all the time. They're going to be really, really confused by it.
But you know what you said about the thing about people wanting to break up? I think, like, mum and I get on, right? And, you know, it's sort of fine having you around. Up to a point. But what I really, when you think about families that don't get on, couples that don't get on, kids that don't get on, it must be horrific. And I think the other thing I worry about, which I think, you know, is people who are living on their own, young people living on their own, how are they going to get together with people?
Well, that's what's really interesting. So lots of people on my Instagram have been sending messages about that. And, you know, they're on dating apps, but obviously it's slightly tedious because you're never actually going to be able to meet up with someone anytime soon, unless you're going to break the law, which I don't think is very sexy, to be honest. Like, right now,
a bit edgy.
It's not actually, because, like, breaking the law in other ways, like doing drugs, like minimal crimes, that's quite sexy. But, like, risking it to potentially kill hundreds of people, I don't think that's hot.
No.
So I think people aren't really taking that risk. But also, you've just got to wait. I mean, I do think young people will be the first to be unleashed
out
into the world. And I really do think there'll be a lot of STDs going around.
Really?
A lot of people are just going to be completely on it. You know, we've all been locked up. People who are on their own haven't had physical interactions with people.
Mm.
As soon as we get out, it's going to be like animals. Mm.
I do miss sort of physical contact of a low level sort of nature, just sort of shaking hands, hugging people.
Yeah.
I think I did a thing with the New European about 20 things I miss in the lockdown, and one of them was la bise.
La bise? Wait, excuse me, you're quarantining with your partner. What are you on about?
Yeah, but I'm saying, you know, just with strangers, you know.
You
what
like
I mean?
Kissing strangers?
I like kissing. I like doing that 1, 2, 3.
You like
thing,
going
yeah.
up to strangers and kissing
not
them?
Strangers.
You're
like,
a super spreader.
Oh, piss off. I like, if you meet, you know, if you're in France, like, we're, you know, when we're in France, you know, like in Paris, it's 2 and in Provence, it's 3. I like that.
C'est toi, oui. I like it as well because it's like, so in this country, men are really afraid of doing stuff, like straight men are really kind of afraid of things that are a bit more feminine. And I just love it in France because that, as an English person, we're sort of conditioned to think that that's super feminine, going mwah, mwah, mwah. Mm. And in France, they just like rock it.
Yeah, I don't do it with men though.
Do you not?
Very
well,
rare.
Then you're not a real, you're not, not embracing the culture
not
properly.
Beezer.
You're actually a bit of a francophobe.
Do I do it with Zizi?
Zizi does it with you. This is my dad's
Philippe does, yeah.
best friend in France.
So, the other, so what, there you are. The La Bise was number 20 on my list. What do you think number one was?
Burnley.
Correct. What do you think number two was?
Swimming.
The Lido.
Lido, yeah.
You're doing well here. Yeah.
Cold water swimming.
I miss music, I miss the cinema. Like, you know, Skippinish were due to play down here, the band that plays on our
I definitely miss live events and, like, live interactions
with people.
Live
sport, I miss.
Oh, of course, live sport. We'll come on to that. I really miss comedy clubs.
Yeah.
Really, really miss that.
I said I missed France and Albania. They're the two countries that I miss going to. I don't miss flying at all, but I do miss going places. I was meant to go to the Ivory Coast, which I've never been to. I was meant to go to Nashville.
Oh my God, what?
For a conference, yeah. I was so excited
about
that.
Oh my God, I really want to go to Nashville.
And I was actually, you know how normally I just go and I come back? I was going to take time to go and do all the country music stuff.
Oh, that's epic. You could have done all the Johnny Cash.
Anyway, the organisers, they got in touch and said that we're really sorry we're having to cancel it because of the coronavirus. But we'd really like you to come next year when we... And I said, oh, thank God for that, because I'm so excited about going to Nashville. She said, unfortunately, it's in North Carolina. So that's a bit of a bummer.
That's really upsetting. Yeah. That is really upsetting.
But I've missed lots of things, but also I've found other things that I like. So, as you know, I've become obsessed with trees. That was starting anyway, but it's definitely developed. I think the bird song, a lot of people talked about that, but I love going up with Mum and I have now got this bird song recognition
app. You've really graduated into old age.
Called Smart Bird ID.
Sponsored this podcast.
Get in touch with us. RSPB, we can do yours if you think that's better.
Big deal.
What you do is you point at a tree and then it takes about 5 seconds, then it tells you what bird it is.
Like Shazam.
It's like Shazam
for birds.
I don't have Shazam.
That's exactly what Shazam
is. That's how they should
market it. You literally do that. I mean, I wish we had Shazam for everything. They have a Shazam for plants now. You can take a picture of a plant. It tells you what plant it is.
Wow. Talking of music, the other big thing, as you know, I'm now a number one artist.
Yeah, I mean, this whole thing is just becoming a bit of a brag.
Well, I don't care. I'm a number one artist. That's a big thing.
You are. Congratulations.
Right, well, why aren't you pleased about that?
You know who was so proud of it? It was Richard Curtis.
Was he?
He thought it was the coolest thing.
Yeah, well, I was so proud of it.
He was so proud of it.
Well, you were part of that.
I was part of it. I filmed you. So I just, you know, as someone who knows behind the scenes of how that all goes, I'm super, super proud of the hard work that you put into making that song.
So that people haven't heard about it, they can download it and carry on making
it. Tell all the information.
Skerryvore, fantastic Scottish trad rock band. Martin Gillespie, terrific musician. He wrote a song called Everyday Heroes about nurses and their health workers. And he got 20 professional musicians, plus me, on the pipes, flute, guitar, fiddle, violin, drums, keyboard, all recorded in our own place, mixed it up, and it's a fantastic sound.
Brilliant.
All the money goes to the NHS charities.
And it got to number one.
It's still number one in Scotland.
Love that. So let's talk about what we don't miss, because I have been really, like, so happy. I think I love wearing the mask outside, because especially in this area, I know so many people in this area, and I just love having an excuse not to stop and talk to people.
I'm like that with dinner parties. No,
exactly. No interactions with people you don't want to interact with.
People you don't want to see. Brilliant.
And then I've also made sort of connections with people that I haven't been seeing as much of via, like, Zoom and social media, because we have more time to really focus on the relationships we care about. But it's been so nice not having to bump into people and sort of make small talk. I haven't made small talk for so long.
Well, the only thing I find on the heath, I'm getting really sick of. So we walk there every morning for about an hour and a half. I'm getting really sick of these things. If one more person says to me, stay safe, I'm going to lose it. I'm getting really sick of people saying, we're so lucky to have the heath. I know we are. Just let's walk on it and not need to feel we have to talk.
But then, can I just counter that?
What?
We were talking the other day about the importance of, like, gratitude lists and sort of reaffirming what you're grateful for. So for people to say, we are very lucky to have the heath.
I agree, but I don't want to be stopping having the same conversations. And the other thing that people are doing is stopping you to tell you about all the people in their orbit, none of whom you know, people they work with, second cousin three times removed, who may or may not have symptoms.
No, that's so boring.
So, it's like coronavirus has definitely replaced Brexit as the thing that everybody wants to stop me and talk about. So I just like walking, watching my trees, listening to my birds.
But you need to just wear a mask. Why don't you just wear a mask? Because then no one will stop you. They won't know it's you. The best thing about the mask, I was just in M&S, you can talk to yourself and no one knows that you're talking to yourself. No one can see your mouth. I was literally talking about what juice I'm going to buy.
You wear juice?
Talking about what juice I'm going to buy out loud, like really loudly.
Why? No,
because I love talking to myself. It's one of my favourite things in the world because I'm so much more interesting than anyone that I'm ever around. Mm. But no one can see, Dad. That's like your dream, because you also are mad and love talking to yourself. So you should get a mask.
Okay.
So what have we been watching? We watched a film together this week, didn't we?
Have you seen Military Wives yet?
No, I need to watch that.
That's really good. Yeah, we watched Misbehaviour.
Misbehaviour. So, directed by Philippa Lothrop.
Mm-hmm.
Written by Rebecca Frayne and Gabby Chiappi, I think is how you say her name. And Rebecca Frayne is my friend's mum. And it was, I mean, I didn't really know that much about, I knew it was going to be about feminism, so obviously love, but I didn't really know that much about the setup of Miss World and how it all happened. The only thing I really knew about Miss World before watching that film was that Damian Marley's mum, who had a baby with Bob Marley, was Miss World.
That's right, when we were in Jamaica for the Grace Gould's wedding, do you remember there was huge pictures of it at the airport?
Yes.
No, Miss World is really interesting, and I thought, this morning I've been writing a piece about this, because I actually think it's much, much more than a kind of, what do they call them?
Rom-com, chick flick,
Because I think he's quite serious about, you know, and you as a sort of, you know, feminist campaigner, I think it's really, really interesting. I covered Miss World in the 80s for 1 year for the Daily Mirror. Slightly embarrassed to...
So we've actually, should we start with this? We've actually found my dad's clippings, right? Do you want to get out the
we call them cuttings.
Whatever, cuttings. Yeah.
Clippings are what you do with your toenails.
Right, so what... For those who are of my generation, I'm just going to explain this as someone who has had to be educated by my father. So journalists back in the day, they had to obviously write for print. They would get big news stories. It was a huge deal if you got a sort of breaking news story. Then, to save all of their work, because it wouldn't be saved on the internet, they would get all of their cuttings, right, and put them into scrapbooks.
Yeah.
So it's really a cute, actually very cute idea. It's a sort of bit like what kids do. But so my dad's got all of his old cuttings, and he reported heavily on Miss World. And was it always in London, Miss World?
I think so. The one I did was at the Albert Hall in 1983. And so I had to spend 12 days with 72, you know, quite attractive young women.
Just say it, go on.
But honestly, when I'm really embarrassed to show you this stuff now.
I want to read out some of the quotes.
Well, it's so bad. I mean, on the day of the contest, right, this is how big it was. It was a huge event every year. So this is the centre spread of the Daily Mirror. And it's like the bloody Grand National sweepstake list. Virgin Islands, Aruba, Australia, Austria, Bahamas, Barbados. You've got 72 countries down there. Now, this is the turnaway, right? I've picked my best five. So I spent 2 weeks with these girls.
Fucking hell.
So this one, Miss Paraguay, I really fancied her, Grace. And I've got to tell you, it was mutual. It really, you know, it was hot. There was a lot going on.
Were
there.
You with my mum at this
I
point?
I was with your mum, but I was doing a job. I was doing it
You
for
had
the paper.
To really go undercover. I had to really warm them up to you.
So this is what I said. It's so bad. Miss Paraguay, if there were a separate title for Miss Sexy, it would go to Flirty Antonelli Montuori, age 21. She's the cream of the South American beauties. Her constant flashing smile, her sexy laugh and bubbling personality give her an edge over all the others. Gets worse. Statistics, 34, 23, 34.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And also, by the way, for those who know, that for a brief period, my dad wrote porn, and I think you get a bit of the tone of it there.
Miss France, 20-year-old Frederic Leroy from Bordeaux, has attracted heavy betting. It was a huge betting market. Brown hair, brown eyed. She's been charming all week with a typically French, cute, sexy smile. She also speaks three languages, including English, which will go down very well during the interview. Statistics, 34, 22, 34.
Right, firstly, 32.
Bad.
Boobs,
yeah.
Right.
You know the bit of the film when they were doing the tape measure?
That is a statistic.
Yeah.
That is a statistic.
They were called vital statistics. They were breast, waist, hips.
So I'm just going to read one of these as well, because I just want my dad to hear how it sounds coming from his now 25-year-old daughter. Right. Miss Spain. If the other girls had their way, 21-year-old Milagros Castro would be the winner. The contestants, not known for their warmth to rivals, have taken to her friendly manner. She's become something of a mother confessor to some of them. She's a model and looks great in a swimsuit. Statistics, 34, 23, 35.
It's so bad. But down here, right?
But also, did you properly hang out with them to find out all of this stuff?
Yeah.
But what were you doing? What do you mean you were with them for 2 weeks? Were you staying in the hotel with them?
No, I stayed for the final, I think. No, it's coming home or not, but like every day...
Come back to mum and be like, fucking Alfie,
Miss Paraguay. They had to do stuff every day. And some of them, a bit like in the film, you know, like Miss Sweden got really sulky. Some of them got really pissed off. So there's this story here. Where is it? Rained off. Why Miss World? So that's page one. Page one. Miss Norway, Karen Doblug, sits it out. And she's looking really pissed off.
This is on page one.
This is page one. The whole of page three, picture of them all in fake rain with umbrellas. Look at the crowds of photographers, right? And they're all doing a song and dance thing, right? And the story is they must think we're drips because they were given these IQ tests, right? Even you can get this one. Question six, what is 6 + 7?
Why did you say even I could get that? Like I'm fucking stupid.
That was a joke. Question 3 × 8 = 12 times what?
2.
Yeah. This is some of these quotes are absolutely brilliant. So the Miss Austria and Miss, I think it was Miss Germany, Claudia Zielinski. So you get close to them. Then you've got, when you get a story like this, you've got them to go and say, what do you think of this? And you've got a quote and blah, blah, blah. So they started saying, this is only happening. They're making us do these stupid tests because one of the sponsors is a new computer company. So they pretend it's all about maths, right? So they tell me that. And then the end of this story, a Miss World spokesman defended the idea. He said, the girls are not going to lose just because these tests show that they're thick.
Right, look, I want to... So where is this one? Okay, so I'm taking the lead on this one because this is just the most phenomenal thing. And I woke up thinking about the fact that this was a story that hard-hitting journalists, Spin Doctor, Malcolm Tucker, Alistair Campbell, once was one of those powerful people in the country, still has a lot of
probably
power.
The world, Grace.
Also
the world.
Has basically destigmatized being in love with trees. You're really a pioneer in everything that you do. But on Tuesday, November 15th, 1983, you wrote a story. Was this a breaking story?
I broke it.
About Miss Yugoslavia as viewers won't see her on TV. Okay?
Yeah.
It is a picture of Miss Yugoslavia with a sort of scarf covering her chest. You can't really see her boobs or anything.
You can see them a bit.
You can't. You can see side boob. You can't see front boob. Alistair has written, skimpy black see-through outfits fail to fit the televised event's super respectable image. I mean, come the fuck on. Super respectable image. But Bernarda, Miss Yugoslavia, has been photographed in a variety of sexy poses, including topless shots. The picture on the left is one of a series in a Yugoslavian magazine. And it was basically an uproar.
See the research we did to get that magazine, this,
but
Grace.
There was an uproar that she posed. It's a beautiful... I mean, she looks like Diana.
I agree, you haven't even
seen
it. She's
gorgeous.
Pull that down.
Oh, wow. I mean, look, it's amazing. She's wearing like a sort of amazing swimming costume kind of thing. She is not topless, okay? Compared to what we got today.
No, but the funniest thing
But
is,
look, let's just quickly...
No, you want to go to the next story.
Okay,
What happened then
I just can't
was,
believe you called it a respectable
there was a
competition.
There was a big uproar. And then so the next day, page 7, topless pin-up faces Miss World row. Julia Morley, who ran the whole thing with her husband Eric...
She's in Misbehaviour.
Yeah, well, she says that this... She blames this guy called David Husich, who runs the Miss Yugoslavia contest... And says that he's brought the contest, the Miss World, into disrepute because he didn't tell them she'd done topless pictures. Mr. Husich, you see, I'm such a journalist, Grace. I find this guy in Belgrade. I get him on the phone. So what's going on, Mr. Husich? Quote, I cannot see what all the fuss is about. In our country, it's perfectly normal for people to walk around topless. It's very hot.
I mean, to be honest...
It's bad.
Okay, let's talk about, right, let's stop doing the readings now, but let's talk about bigger picture. When you were doing that, when you were reporting that stuff, now obviously as you wanted to tell me today and you wanted to tell me yesterday, you were also simultaneously doing some hard-hitting journalism, right? Mm. You covered lots of big things, the IRA, you know, huge stuff that was happening at the time, huge stories. When you were doing all of this Miss World stuff, was there a part of you that was just like, this is absolutely brilliant because I just get to talk to beautiful women for 2 weeks and just like write sort of borderline porn about what they look like and how lovely they
sexy,
are.
Sexy smile.
But,
cute
but was there in that period in your life, did you think there's something really fucking weird about this? Be honest.
I can't honestly remember. I think I must have done, but I think it was. No, to be honest, I think I probably saw it as a bit of a laugh. And I was working with Brendan Monks, who was a photographer, a really good guy. And he was somebody else who just, he's a clever, smart guy, intelligent, understands the world. But I think we had a lot of fun. And the thing that happens, this comes out in the film actually, because in the Keira Knightley film, should we tell the story or?
Well, tell the premise. So what's in the trailer of the film is basically it's about a group of women's liberation activists. And they essentially sort of throw down.
Well, they disrupt the final in 1970. But I think what happened in the real, as it were, is they threw flower bombs. But in the film, they've made it a bit more dramatic than that. But what's it, you know, they're real characters. And what I love about the film is at the end when you see Keira Knightley becoming the person she's
and
played.
And they're still
there. Yeah. And, you know, obviously quite elderly now. But what I thought was, you know, so I definitely thought at the time, I mean, it must be impossible for you to understand this, but what the women's liberation people, the way they were portrayed in the media was as complete cranks. So if you remember in the film, the person played by Jessie Buckley, Jo Robinson, she, part of her shtick and why she doesn't get on with Keira Knightley's character a lot of the times, she thinks she should have nothing to do with the media because the media is a big part of the patriarchy. Well, it probably was. And to some extent still is. So I think something like that. I'm a young reporter. I get told in this very kind of blokey, Fleet Street-y, hard-drinking-y, smoking-y environment, Campbell, you struck lucky, you're going to be on Miss World this year. I probably did just think, oh, that's going to be fun, to be absolutely frank.
I mean, I don't think, but there's no reason to be hard on yourself for that, because that was that era of time. And I completely, what I think they really nailed in the film was the perception that, like, not feminist-type people had of those women's lib people.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Which was just that they were kind of boring, hideous. You know, they had this real, and it's a stereotype that still lives with feminists to a lot of people today, which is just that they're like moany and whining on and all of that stuff. And that what I thought the film just nailed so much is they weren't like that. I mean, Jessie Buckley's character was hilarious. Mm. I thought they were also sort of vibrant and full of life. But I'm sure at that time, you probably thought the same of the women's lib
movement. Well, certainly my mum would have done.
What she would have sort of thought.
I think she'd have thought.
Because it's interesting in the film, the Keira Knightley's mum's character has got a bit of a kind of, why are you doing this?
Yeah,
and she loved Miss World. Keira Knightley's character's mum loved Miss World.
And so do the kids. So you know, so like, and we definitely used to watch Miss World. Like, it was a big television event. And you always wanted the UK to win. And of course, in the year I did it, having written on the morning, she had absolutely no chance because she had no personality. I know.
Oh my God. But you were biased because you wanted Miss Paraguay.
I wanted Miss Paraguay, yeah. None of the people that any of us, me and Brendan, tipped got on the top three.
Well, what does that say?
Mm.
Bad taste. I'm not
so,
thinking.
No, so I think it was what I thought the film got. What I loved about the film is that actually it says something about campaigning. So those people, you and I would not know their names, but they were a big part of the movement that you're now part of.
100%. And I also think when you come back to that sort of difference in, like, Keira Knightley's character is a bit more, well, she's middle class, but also, I mean, I'm not saying this comes from her being middle class, but she was more like media savvy and thought that they should use the media to
but
get their message
that,
across.
Yeah.
But I still think that there's elements of that in the Labour Party now, where you've got people in the further left parts of the Labour Party who think that you shouldn't play with, like, parts of mainstream media, which will really help you to get your point across because they're so...
Mm. No, but I thought the thing I loved about it was the bit in the film where the two of them, very different backgrounds, very different attitudes to lots of things, but they've got this shared view that women are, you know, systemically made inferior to men, and that this objectification process, which is what Miss World is a part of that. And there's a bit in the film where they basically say to each other, almost like they're having a row, but they basically say, we've got to do this together, no matter how much we disagree, because you only make change happen if you decide you're going to make it happen. And that is true about all campaigning. So that's why I love the film. I loved it because I thought it was, I mean, obviously, lots of very attractive women in it. No, that's not the reason. I loved it because it was about campaigning. And also, I think it was extraordinary to watch it with you and Mum. Mum and I were together at that time and probably thought no big deal. Right? Miss World, no big deal.
I'm sure Mum didn't.
She might have done. But you were watching it and saying, oh my, you know, like when Bob Hope was doing all those sort of, That's how big it was. Bob Hope was one of the biggest stars in the world, and he was the
contact. Oh, I think it was really big, because coming back to my main reference of it, when Bob Marley got with Miss World, it was a huge deal.
Yeah.
I mean, she was also like a white Jamaican, which there were lots of sort of controversy around it. That's the other thing in misbehaviour,
and this is a true story.
There were two, they had first two and second.
From South Africa, because of the whole kind of apartheid.
Yeah, but also first and second place in that one, they were both black.
And Peter Hain, who went on to be a friend and a minister in the Labour government, he was in the film because he was a massive anti-apartheid campaigner.
Who was he?
Peter Hain, he was the one who got onto Eric Morley as he arrived into the building. He was only one for one scene. He was a South African guy. He was,
oh, him. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that bit when he said, why haven't you got... Oh, that's so interesting.
So I thought it was a really good film. And, of course, it's interesting. You talk about, you know, how you're adapting. The film industry's had to adapt. That was going to be in cinemas.
Yeah.
And we watched it video on demand.
But I think as well, like, in a way... Like you're saying, they're having to adapt. And I hope they'll realise, because actually that will reach a lot of people. They might not make as much money, but actually it's on Apple TV. People are still buying money to watch that film. And it's just amazing to bring out some of those films right now, because people really need that kind of uplifting, inspiring type of...
Did you see the story that just before
Oh, my God. Yeah, you showed me this one.
This is unbelievable, right? So this was in... I used to do court cases and stuff as well. This is a front page lead. Daily Mirror, Friday, November the 4th, it got 16p, killed for turning off the telly. Soccer man Stanley Dingley killed his girlfriend because she switched off the cup final on TV.
I know this was a fact.
That was a fact, it was a court case.
That's what happened. Because it sounds like a joke.
No. He stabbed her seven times in the neck, then calmly left her body lying in a flat and watched the rest of the match at a club. When he was arrested, Dingley told the police, "I was provoked. Do you know what it's like?
You know what it's like.
I really wanted to watch that match. What with her nagging and turning off the television, it got me upset."
Well, this is just a really brilliant man that we've got right here. What an inspiration.
He denied murder but admitted manslaughter at Nottingham Crown Court.
Thing is, so let's talk about this. Right, let's talk about men and the fact that men don't have football right now.
It was the FA Cup replay between Manchester United and Brighton.
It was a replay.
It was a replay.
It wasn't a live match.
No, it was a replay, as in... Do you know what a replay is in football?
Not really. Replay to me means a repeat. No. Like, it's the same game that's already happened. It's just playing the next week.
No. Manchester United played Brighton and they drew.
So then they did another game.
So they had another game. That's
and who did
replay.
He support, Mr. Murderer?
I don't know. He lived in Nottingham.
You don't know? You didn't go that far?
Well, I was covering a court case. You just report what gets said.
You need to know who... I need to know who you're supporting.
Then, of course, I got pulled off that to go to Miss World. So I haven't got the verdict. I haven't got how much he got. But anyway, he would have gone down for a while, I think.
Yeah, he's probably out now.
But that's interesting, isn't it? Because that's another, basically... That's a man-woman domestic violence.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So how do you think men... And, you know, there are lots of women who are obsessed with football, but I think you struggle to find a woman who's murdered her husband for turning the football off while she's watching it.
Well, can I just tell you something? I read yesterday, day before, that of the increase that has been of domestic violence, quite a lot of it has been women on men.
But that 100%, but still it's way more men on women. It's just the numbers gone up, and with that,
yeah, I think it was
women.
The third.
I mean, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Women can domestically abuse
I've got to be honest,
men.
I am really, really, really missing football. And I'm really worried it's not going to come back a long time. And it's definitely not going to come back as a major spectator sport with big live events.
No.
And as you know, I probably spend more time speaking to football people than any other walk of life. Maybe politics. No, I think football actually ahead of politics.
Yeah, well, right now you're very connected with the Burnley squad. Is that because it makes you feel like football is still happening?
No, I think it's because they basically see me as the sort of co-gaffer.
I'm really not sure about that, but I'll let them know that you think that, and I'll find out. I'll do a survey.
They know I think that.
So, but how do you think that men across the country will be coping in terms of, like, football gives such a structure to life? It structures the week, it structures the day, you know, everyone sort of works towards watching Match of the Day. What can you do to replace that? Obviously, you're finding it really difficult, but I think there are people who have less, you know about 30 things that make you happy. So you'll do that when you're feeling down. But for some people, football is their main lifeline. Yeah. Like, that's the thing that makes them feel sane. What can they be doing instead?
Well, I mean, look, I've not... One thing I've not done, I started a little bit at the start. I watched a couple of old games. I watched Celtic, Inter Milan in the 1967 European Cup final. I watched a couple of old Scotland games. I watched Burnley winning the playoffs against Stockport County in the 90 year you were born. Bob's, your granddad's last ever game.
Wow.
But it's just, it's so not the same. I would rather watch a boring 0-0 live game than watch a rerun of a game that was really exciting at the time. And so I've actually just decided no point in doing that. And I'm really, really lucky because I do have lots of, you know, friends in football. I do talk to the manager quite a lot. I do talk to some of the players quite a lot. I do have, you know, people who are in that sports world. And of course, you know, at the moment, talking to Sean Dyche quite a lot, and he, you know, he's talking lots to me about, you know, what do you think is going on inside government? What are they doing? Why did he say that? What do you think of this? What do you think of that? And meantime, I'm finding it very interesting to talk to him about how he's coping individually, but also how he's continuing to manage a team of people to make
keep
them
morale up.
Keep their morale, want to stay fit. And I think one of the, look, you talked about structure. One of the things that everybody who loves football loves is you've always got something clear to look forward to. You've got the next match. You've got the next cup run. You've got the next transfer window. You've got the next pre-season tour.
Are you talking about fans here or people in
both.
Football? Both.
Both.
Yeah.
Whereas now, they've got literally, they've got a vague expectation that it might come back. What they're
I
also know,
think the thing that, that, to add on to that, is the fact that it's all people talk about.
Most of the time.
So you've lost the thing. It's like, that's how I feel about gossip. I really miss gossip, like interesting things that are happening that I can bitch about.
I don't.
You don't have that main thing that's your point of reference when you meet people. That's the thing that you talk
about. Well, I tell
you
what, sometimes I, you know, the other thing is really weird. Like, if I'm, I've been separated, apart from the government briefings, which do my head in, I don't watch any telly or listen to the radio during the day at all. I don't do any of that Netflix stuff or that. I'll be up here, I'll be working, writing, thinking, talking, whatever. Then I'll go and watch the government briefing and then I'll slump down in front of the sofa and I'll think, I'll just watch a bit of telly. And by default, because I've always done it for years, I just go to Sky Sports, right? And I see what's on. And I've got to say, I've started to watch a little bit of Sky Sports News just to see how they manage to fill the space.
What are they talking about?
They're talking about different things that the clubs are saying. They're talking about, like, oh, I'll tell you another great thing that's happened. You know that boy Callum up in Scotland who does this football podcast, right? It's a young guy, a teacher. He's got his own football podcast and he asked me to go on it.
What's the podcast called again, just so we can shout that out? Because he's really sweet.
CFB. CFB?
Yeah.
Is that right? But it's basically, he's obsessed with Scottish football. And, you know, so
are you.
So he asked me to go on the podcast to talk about the novel that I wrote with Fletch because there's a lot of Scottish football in it. Anyway, perfectly enjoyable. Went out, fine. He said he was very happy with it. But I said to him, if there's any help I can give you with the people I know to get them on, is there anybody you really like? He said, I'd love to get Joey Barton. So I asked Joey Barton if he'd do it. And he said, yeah, I'll do it. You know, Joey loves talking.
Joey loves that.
And so he did it. So the next thing I knew about it was Callum doing a tweet saying, can't believe it, what a day. Just spent 6 hours talking on Zoom to Joey Barton, right? He's put it out in 6 parts. And what he said about Rangers has made news right around the world.
Which is what?
Just about him slagging off the people.
Oh, God, yeah, because the thing I will say about Joe Barton, if we could have, he would have spoken to us for 12 more hours.
Yeah.
He's like, gets fixated into a conversation. You could tell when we were interviewing him that he had his sort of assistant manager next to him, who was just so used to the fact that Joey says, yeah, I'm just 5 more minutes. And then he'd be like, let's just do another hour. It was three, our one was 3 hours long. Yeah. I had to cut that down so much because he just hasn't really got that sense of time.
He is interesting.
No, 100%. But he sort of.
No, he said he's got no sense of time.
He did say that he's got no sense of time, and he didn't really have this need that he had somewhere to be when his players were warming up out of the window where we were interviewing. We could see the players warming up. He should have been down there with them, but he just sort
of... Well, listen, how crazy is this? So, like, today, I'd written this piece yesterday for the Record that you took the picture for about playing the pipes at the funeral. And in the Record, they ran the whole transcript of the podcast about Rangers, the whole thing.
The whole of Joey's
The bit about Rangers, yeah. And it was front page and back page. And the story that I picked up today was also in the paper. And then I did an interview with Radio Clyde and I heard it on their news as well. Rod Stewart phoning up to attack Joey Barton for what he said about Celtic. So Callum is sitting there and he said at one point yesterday, is there such a thing as trending podcasts?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, his podcast was trending in 14 countries in the world.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my God. That's so good, though, as well. It's great for him. I bet he's over the moon.
Oh, yeah.
So can we talk about, because we've done a bit of feminism, done a bit of football. I'd actually quite like to talk about sort of live events in general and how you think or how we think, because obviously you've lost football. I've lost the thing that's like my football, which is...
Listen, I've also lost public speaking.
Yeah, fucking hell, you're going to be broke.
Oh, fucking income, that is.
God.
No fridge. You should get your own fridge.
I've got my own fridge. It's actually really full at the moment. That's because my boyfriend pays for everything. I'm very mean.
You are a bit tight, actually.
I just like people spoiling me.
Yeah, but I think tight is a horrible characteristic.
I'm not tight. Like, I'm not tight.
You are quite tight.
You and Mum will be the only people in the world that will describe me as tight. None of my friends. I'm so generous. But I like the feeling that people are spending money on me.
But like Rory and Callum, they give money. They give. They buy for...
Do you need money? If you need money, I can help you out. Just let me know. Do you need... Are you
I don't mean
sort
for
of
me.
Signalling
I mean like,
that you are
I mean like, you
needing
know,
money.
If
right
that,
now.
I mean,
I've noticed the paint around the house is sort of starting to crumble down. I think.
You know, Mum's got this crazy idea we're going to paint
the bathroom
together.
Yeah, she said this weekend you're going to paint
chance.
The bathroom together.
Not a chance.
But so let's talk. So I have felt, you know, you say you don't think football as it was will be the same for a long time. I think comedy will come even after that. I really think, like, live, those kinds of... Because at least football is outside. Like, football stadiums are outside. Comedy is people laughing with their mouths open in very small, dingy rooms. It's sort of a great way to spread germs. And it has made me feel really, really sad because I felt like I finally got in the flow of everything and I was really starting to find my feet.
No, the last
really...
gig you did I saw was brilliant.
Yeah, and I just
definitely
feel...
Improving.
How do you think we will adapt from that? And it's the same with you in public speaking. Like, do you buy like the idea of having like comedy nights on Zoom? And...
Yeah, some of that. I think people will. I mean, look, I think some of the stuff that you've seen already. I mean, John Cleese charging £250 to insult people online—that's comedy.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Wait, did you pay him £250?
No, he did it for nothing.
And then did he start off of that? Or?
No, he's already doing it. But he probably did it to me because...
Is he pocketing that money himself?
I hope so, because he's always going about harder because his wife took all his fortune.
Why? I don't know.
Oh, messy divorce. But no, that was one of the best things of the lockdown was when I was out playing my bagpipes and he did a tweet saying this is a really good way to keep people inside their houses.
I mean, that was amazing. And then he said, Alistair, you're one of my favourite Scottish gits. But haggis on you when this is all over. I mean, that's epic.
That was epic.
You
yeah.
love him
I
so
love
much.
Him. I love him. I love him. I love Michael Palin. I love them all. But
he's
I think
a real
that.
Hero.
So I think comedy. You see, you could imagine. I could imagine doing a. So like that last venue you're in. Where was it? Brighton.
Brighton.
I went
yeah.
to, right. So that was probably too small for this. But if you got a slightly bigger venue.
Yeah.
And you actually made people sit 5 yards apart and made and made big made comedy out of the whole thing.
But I think that...
I've not seen any very good comedy about the coronavirus, which makes me people... Maybe people just think it's too early, but...
I think definitely people think it's too early, and there are jokes that people don't want to say right now. I think, obviously, the Edinburgh Fringe was cancelled this year. When it comes back next year, if it does, everyone's shows are going to be about corona. I think it will actually get a bit boring. I think so many people will be writing books and making films about this period that... I sort of feel like once it's done, I don't really want to think about it that much because it's going to have been such a sort of traumatic, enduring period of time. I don't want to really make loads of comedy about it. But I do think making light out of what's going on is really important. And I think social media is amazing for that. But I also
well, I'll tell you,
it's not the same as being in a live.
The two people who send the most memes, GIFs, funny videos by a mile in my phone thing are Frank Warren and Ruud Gullit.
Who was the second one?
Ruud Gullit, Dutch footballer, former Chelsea manager.
Oh, okay.
They are both on it all the time.
I mean, I'm not joking. This is just that anyone who isn't on WhatsApp with my dad, all he does is send me, like, with very random memes, sometimes quite sexist ones that are like
pranks.
They're like making jokes out of women being at home and supposed to being in the kitchen.
No.
Yeah, that wives school one was
wives school, but that was funny.
It was funny. No, what I'm saying is just like I always, when you send me these memes, I'm like, where have you gotten these from?
Well, that
like,
was
I don't
Frank
really understand where these have come from. It's because you're just forwarding things on WhatsApp.
Yeah. Well, that's been an interesting phenomenon.
100%.
I mean, 100%. But that's comedy.
100%.
So you talk about comedy adapting, that's comedy.
No, 100%.
That is people saying to each other, this is funny, you have it. I can't go and watch somebody perform this, have it.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff that's shared is absolute crap, but then you don't share it.
There's this amazing guy called Leslie Jordan. I don't know, you probably don't know him, but he's this American gay actor from like the deep south in America. He's from Tennessee. He's the funniest guy, and he's been posting videos every day, and they all start with, well, shit, what are y'all doing? And then he goes, I'm bored shitless. And he's just, like, constantly commentating on how fucking bored he is, and he's like, I bet y'all are all out there screwing, and I'm just here sitting. I'm bored. Like, I think there have been people who have really come out the woodworks of, like, really keeping us entertained and keeping us sort of light and connected with other people. Like, that's the thing I feel I have found. How many weeks have we been clapping for the NHS now? Four?
Yeah.
That was the fourth one.
Mm.
Every week,
mm.
it's more and more people mm. out on our street.
Mm.
I think there'll be two reasons for that. Obviously, weather's getting nicer. People are becoming even more grateful for the NHS. I'm sure a lot of them coming out actually voted Tory in the last general election. So I do think a lot of them are hypocrites. But I will say, I think they're coming out for the NHS, but I also think they're coming out because you're playing the bagpipes. It's become a real thing in our neighbourhood now. Mm. I bumped into some of our neighbours when I was walking to the shops earlier, and I won't say their names, but they've requested a song that they want you to play next week, and it's becoming this real thing.
I've had requests through social media. I've been learning new tunes because of that. But and that's happening all over, I mean, obviously mainly in Scotland. But I know Ian McNichol, who used to work at the Labour Party, he's done it down where he lives. I think.
Does he play the bagpipes?
Yeah, he's a really good player. Not as good as me, but he's good.
Right, Ian, if you're listening. We once
had a competition and he actually got he won in a vote, but that was because he was a general secretary and I'd retired by then.
Right.
But then the other thing going on, of course, is because if you remember the first one, and actually it was dark. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I know. It was actually dark. Now it's like night.
It's like, yeah. You know. And so just for people who don't know, our next door neighbour, the Bridge family, and there's a picture over there of you and Tony Blair and Sissy when you were what, three?
No, but about five or six.
Okay. Yeah. Outside number 10. Oh yeah, it couldn't be three because that was a... So, and Sissy's are now a nurse at the Whittington Hospital. And when the first one happened, her mum and her sister, who'd both been absolutely frantic about this whole PPE thing and whether they're getting properly protected and so forth. So that was when, you remember, we said, why don't we go and play the pipes for that? And then Sissy was arriving home during the clap. And you said, why don't you go and surprise her and go down the bottom of the street?
So we escorted her home with the pipes.
And it went around the world, that. It was massive.
Yeah.
And then I wrote that tune, Our Neighbours, Our Nurses. And, yeah, I think you're right. I think music, I've written about this on my website today. I think music, in times of tough times, times of crisis. You know, why do people have music at funerals? Why do they have music at weddings? Because it's important in big moments.
Yeah, but also, I mean, 100%, but also music has, I think it's one of the only things, maybe you could liken it to sport, but it has such a power to make people feel better about themselves.
Or worse.
About life. Or worse, obviously, but... Music, I've been listening to so much music during this period because firstly, I've gotten so bored of watching stuff and just watching stuff. And I think having a bit of variety, listening to podcasts.
I've definitely been listening to more music. I've way listened.
Yeah, well, I came in the other day and you were just lying on the sofa with your phone speaker, so not very high quality, listening to Greatest Hits by Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift's Greatest Hits.
Like, you were like a teenage girl pining over a boy who just broke up with you, listening to Taylor Swift.
I like most Taylor Swift. I've also been listening. I've been going through the whole of Motown. I have a little bit of Jack Brel and Elvis every single day, even if it's only one song. And a lot of Scottish stuff.
Good. I've been listening to lots of reggae, lots of Chronics.
I've done a bit of Bob.
But yeah, you listen to Bob, but I've been listening to lots of new music. My boyfriend, who I'm quarantining with, is obsessed with music, so all he does is play new music that's coming out. So that's actually been nice to have a bit of variety, but I think it's very important. But I think it's important to listen to podcasts, so we're going to be bringing out probably two a week, aren't we?
Are we?
Well, I think so. I think this is so easy. We can at least do one of these a week, of just me and you, telling funny stories.
Should I play my my sissy tune on the practice chanter?
Yeah, on your practice.
Yeah, this isn't the real pipes. This is a practice chanter.
This is just a practice. Oh, is that necessary?
No.
I wish you'd let me learn. This is a great shame in my life that my dad thinks I wouldn't be a good bagpipe player.
I don't think you'd have the patience with me.
No, but I'm not saying you should teach me, but I'd love to learn.
Well, you go and find a teacher then.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I will. Thanks. I'll just put out a feeler on this podcast. If you're a bagpipe teacher
in
Northwest London.
If you want me to teach you the bagpipes, I'll teach you. Why don't we do a podcast next week when I try and teach you?
I think I'd really like it because I love the sound of the bagpipes.
Yeah, but I guess you've only ever heard it played well.
I have only... No, you were bad when you started properly doing it.
Oh, bullshit. I played since I was six.
I know, but when you started properly going for it, you've gotten so much better.
Oh, get on.
Truly, do you know how many films I've videoed of you playing the bagpipes? I am a trained observer of your skill at playing bagpipes. All I fucking do at the moment is film you playing the bagpipes. You're so good now, like pitch perfect. You definitely weren't before.
You filmed my trees as well.
Film
you were
trees.
Trees.
Yeah, the tree thing is getting out of hand.
My tree thing.
Yeah. It's like what you think about me and yoga, like your obsession with trees.
No, but I am absolutely deadly serious. You laugh every time I say this. I am going to organise the Tree Olympics. Every country in the world is going to have major television events to pick its favourite tree. It's gonna be like Miss World.
And
then we're going to have a judging panel, of which I'll be on.
You describe the trees in the same way you describe Miss Paraguay? When you do the Tree Olympics, can you please sort of say it looked at me in a sultry, inquisitive manner?
No, because it wouldn't be true.
Its roots were so deep and invested in the earth.
A nice arse. I wouldn't say that.
Just so I can see its soul.
I could definitely say that tree. I did a thing the other day, right? I did a tweet and I did a picture of this tree that looked like it was really fed up with life. And I said, new category in the Tree Olympics, trees that are really pissed off with, look like they're really pissed off with lockdown. I got 100 sent in and some of them were amazing.
No, they have real characters. It's a bit like clouds, you know, when you see stuff in clouds. Yeah, but I know it is, but I'm saying they do have real characters. But the thing I keep saying when my dad is pitching the Tree Olympics, Tree Eurovision, whatever, the world vision, is trees don't speak. So
that's where you're wrong. If you read the
scene, why don't you adapt it?
They don't speak to
why
us.
Don't you get comedians?
Speak to each
why
other.
Don't you get comedians of the countries? So the best comedians become the voice of the tree.
No,
so you've got
a
talking tree. No, I'm not.
It's a serious issue, not bloody.
But I'm saying you need to add a bit of character to the trees so they can speak back at you.
They speak to each other.
Yeah, but you for
that's why we're gonna have team doubles, mixed doubles. You know that?
Relay.
I'm telling you.
Got relay.
You don't believe me. Yesterday's category was self-isolating trees. It was these great pictures of the trees all on their own.
Aww, makes me sad.
Now listen, I've had enough of this. Can we go now?
Yeah, I love it. Okay, thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back very soon. God, that was an hour long. Say goodbye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.